The views expressed in this interview are those of the individuals and do not reflect the official policy or position of the U.S. government, the Department of Defense, the U.S. Navy, or the Naval Postgraduate School. Welcome to the Trident Room, brewer of stout conversation, unfiltered and on tap. On today's episode, Trident Room host Carl Flynn sits down with Dr. Joe Hooper and Anna Eckhart.
So, first of all, thank you both for making the time. I know, Dr. Hooper, you're an extremely busy man, but we got this figured out, so glad you're able to join us. So just wanted to start out, so this particular class that we're going to be discussing, so I was in it last quarter, I was in person, went over anything and everything from small arms to torpedoes and underwater explosives. And one interesting thing that we were talking a little bit before we actually started the podcast was one of my roommates from the Naval Academy, who's a SWO, who's out in Japan, just out of the blue reached out to me. He's like, hey, man, are you in the weapons class with Dr. Hooper? I'm like, yeah, how do you know about this? You're in the fleet. And he's like, oh, I'm in the class too. So that sort of whole conversation of, you know, why the heck are you taking an academic class from NPS when you're in the fleet? So hopefully we can get into that and answer some of those questions. So first of all, just the first question is, how did this all get started? So one thing you'd mentioned in the questionnaire I sent you was there's the pipeline backup and you're directed by Paparo. So please take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. So this started last fall. Okay. We started having discussions with the aviation community. And then the SECNAV had also visited here, and there were some discussions on this also. There's considerable pipeline backup. Mm. Paparo had directed a number of actions in order to close this. But we had a number of incidents coming out of ROTC, coming out of the Naval Academy. So they were waiting considerable times there in Pensacola, like up to 15 months in some cases, even longer.
Oh, wow.
And so they were trying to come up with a number of things to have them do on the aviation side. And so NPS and a few others have suggested, like, this makes sense for a grad ed opportunity. So we currently have a few programs. One we generally call the Shoemaker Scholars and one called the Bowman Scholars, where instance will come here usually directly after their undergraduate. They do a condensed 12-month program in resident. It's a little bit easier in resident, right? You can do it rapidly. But we have programs for instance right now. So we have suggested, okay, we could do something distance learning while they're there in Pensacola, at least get them a head start. It's probably not enough time to get a full graduate degree, but you could get a head start on a number of things which you could eventually complete later in the career. And so, yeah, the class that you were in, it was kind of a small part of what was a relatively large lift for NPS. We had been talking about this with the aviation community, but there's a lot of people working on various aspects of this, and there's a lot of pressurization from, like I said, all the way up to kind of, you know, Paparo, the head aviator. Airbus is heavily involved, and there's a lot of flags looking at the problem. And so when we finally got the go signal, it was pretty late. And so I'll credit a lot of our departments, especially ops research, systems engineering. They sort of moved heaven and earth to put a lot of these ensigns and a number of other students into some of these programs in a, you know, relatively short time frame. And so I might have Anna kind of give it kind of an overview of like the final program that that we had worked out, you know, primarily for these ensigns.
Yeah, I think so. The original number we were given was 160 ensigns. So that's what we were planning for. And I think we maybe had 6 weeks or something around that time frame when we said we were told go.
Oh, plenty of time.
Sure. And so they wanted them to complete 2 certificates within 6 months. So here at NPS, typically one certificate takes a year. So it required us to stack their classes, which requires more staffing from faculty. So again, figuring that out in 6 weeks is not easy.
Right.
So also we were directed to provide them with ops analysis and STEM generally. So basically what we had to do was engage these departments, see who could take on the load. Obviously, it's mostly operations research because everyone took one operations research certificate and then one in a general varying STEM area depending on their undergraduate background.
As you probably know, ops analysis is kind of unique. It's a little bit different than, so for example, in like the program that you're in, Carl, like we have a lot of engineering duty officers, other restricted line.
Yep.
They're sent here for technical degrees. Ops analysis is different. It doesn't have its own restricted line community.
Okay.
It's drawn usually from unrestricted line. But it's a lot of things that are like kind of badly lacking out there in the fleet. People doing like planning, strategy. Paparo was very passionate about this, having a degree in ops analysis from NPS.
Makes sense.
And also I think like feeling it very heavily out at the Pacific Fleet, where they're trying to look at a lot of these things. And they simply don't have people. Like, there's a bunch of stories we were passed from Paparo. Like, he's asking questions like, we've got all these assets in the area. Like, what's the combined probability that we lose track of this asset, like, that we're trying to look at? We've got each of these probabilities from these various platforms, space layer, like other surface assets. Like, okay, did we lost this asset? We lost track of it. Was that likely? Was that, like, what was the expected? And then basically no one can answer questions that would be covered by things like introductory ops analysis classes here.
Right.
And it's part of a larger talent management issue where, like, the Navy sends some people here to get trained in this, but then doesn't actually put them in billets where they can be utilized. And the operational fleets who are, like, you know, directly at the front of the fight are really feeling it. And so part of the intent for this was, okay, we're putting a bunch of aviators through. Yep, they're headed to flight school next. But this is an important kind of, like, gap and, like, down the pipeline. We want to get as many people as we can with some experience in this. And so, again, I'll give credit to Matt Carlisle, the chair, and a bunch of other people in ops analysis, really moved heaven and earth to get every single ensign into an ops analysis cert. And then we also put them into a number of our STEM certs. Those are maybe a little bit easier because we have, you know, some space available. Like, we're not packed to the gills in, like, the physics department,
right,
or in, you know, some of the other departments. So this was a high priority for the Navy, which we're able to get, you know, the majority of people into. And so, yeah, so all of the ensigns were able to earn, that's still ongoing, but they're, you know, in the process of earning two certificates in a pretty short, compressed time frame.
And so I think we had to go back and forth quite a bit, obviously, because the list of who's going to flight school changes. So I think we got down to 114, 111, I think, ensigns total, but that's still quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And yeah. Just a question on my end. So is it strictly ensigns, or are there also second lieutenants who are also student naval aviators, or is it strictly just Navy personnel?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, so this program, but maybe to your point on, for example, like your roommate in the academy who's also in this class, kind of what we've been doing for this is, so we stood up this on a quick turn for student naval aviators. Mm-hmm. But this is part of, like, a much larger push that we've had all the way up from the Secretariat, as well as from the people who pay for NPS and have run us OpNav N7. So Vice Admiral Hughes there actually has an entire track on what's called the NAF Plan Implementation Framework. These are kind of, like, the very high-level goals that we have for, like, long-range fires, terminal defense. But there's one on education.
Oh, interesting.
And the Secretariat has also produced their own naval education strategy. But all over this strategic guidance is programs like we stood up for the ensigns, really. In our mind, this is a pilot for, like, kind of a different way of doing business at NPS that is going to be better positioned to serve the fleet. So we tried to use this as, okay, we're doing all this for the ensigns, but let's, for example, like, we swarmed a bunch of resources that we had here in our unit to try to make, you know, like, I won't ask you for comments on my own Sakai class for my own class, but we tried to use this to get, like, all of the Sakai things, like, more uniform. We try to get, like, some of the videos improved across for all of these things, something that could be a lot of other students could plug into in a very easy way. Like, for example, so Lieutenant Christie, kind of a SWO out there in the fleet. He's also doing some weapons tactics instructor courses on there.
Correct, yeah.
But an opportunity for these types of students to plug into NPS, they're not going to come to Monterey for 2 years, very few of them, especially if you're like a fast runner in a lot of these communities in SWO or aviation, unless you happen to get lucky through some program, like, you know, this 12-month program,
right,
you happen to get lucky here in the pipeline backup, you are not probably coming to NPS for 2 years. And many of them are often, I mean, they're paying out of pocket to get a graduate degree, kind of working it somewhere in the mix, because you need that still for a major command.
Correct.
So we have this is a kind of a piece of a much larger effort at NPS where we've been trying to reorient some of our educational offerings to serve not only these, you know, aviation ensigns, but kind of more broadly, like a much broader part of the fleet.
Yeah, and so I just want to be clear too that our goal with this, which we're calling the NPS Extended Campus, is we want to maintain our core in-residence offerings, but we're just trying to expand our education. So it's not to substitute what we are already doing. But as Joe is mentioning, there are those communities that we simply cannot reach with in-resident education.
Right.
So we are, as he mentioned, we're sort of shifting our resources, our support resources for the faculty and for, you know, the institution at large to provide quality distance learning. Because at this point, it's sort of largely been on the departments themselves, but this is a centralized function so that we can support across campus.
So maybe, yeah, so an excellent point, maybe a little bit on this. So we've reoriented kind of part of academic affairs where we're in, which we have, as Anna said, referred to as the NPS Extended Campus. And, you know, we've reoriented some personnel and some other resources on this. And so it's meant to serve somewhat in a role similar to what some other universities have, like Purdue has their global campus. University of Maryland has one, which serves a lot of active duty as well. Mm. But ours is heavily integrated into the actual Navy Marine Corps system, right? So it's meant to award some of the subspecialty codes. It's meant to be eventually integrated into, you know, some of the detailing processes, the community management processes. So we've had a bunch of discussions with Navy HR in Millington. We just not too long ago, also had some discussions with MNRA in Quantico, Marine Corps MNRA, kind of like how can we integrate some of these things so it's like some of these distance learning or some of these other certificates, which, for example, some of these, like the instance you're taking, you could take one now, but you could eventually stack another few certificates, you know, during later tours, you know, combine these all into a distance learning, primarily distance learning degree. But so we've been trying to integrate this more directly, so it's kind of part of the consciousness and part of the talent management process for the Navy and Marine Corps. And this is kind of what everyone wants at the high level, but we're trying to, like, you know, turn like the ship here slowly. But as Anna mentioned, very, very important that we're not trying to, like, massively change anything we do for the in-resident.
Correct.
Because we still have a lot of people coming here for, I mean, ops analysis, everything that the engineering duty officers do is a good example. They want, you know, the hardcore technical degrees. That really needs to be in resident, like they're doing a hardcore thesis. It's hard to replicate that experience here. You really need the focused 2 years, and so many of our communities, like that's something that we're trying to maintain. We're trying to reach other additional students here.
Your detailer, your monitor sends you here. You have orders here. With distance learning, the way it's set up right now is it's completely you're opting in yourself. So people don't have orders written for grad ed, except for the ensigns. They did. That was, in fact, my understanding, part of their orders was to do grad ed.
Correct.
But typically distance learning, it's on your own time. You're choosing to do so. It's still mission funded for active duty Navy and Marines. We also have a large amount of civilians in our distance learning. But as he was essentially saying, is we would like to see if we can shift that so it's actually part of the talent management processes. So we've been thinking about things, you know, could you do bundled orders or things like that where you have part of your time dedicated to distance learning and then part of the time your job. So there's just a lot of ways we're trying to think of how we can do things differently.
That from the talent management angle, as a Marine, that makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of good could be done there. Data point of one, but my experience was I was a platoon commander in the fleet, and then my battalion XO called me and one other lieutenant from my company into his office, and he goes, "Hey guys, there's this thing called NPS." I'm like, yeah. Okay, what is that? And he's like, "Well, if you went to the Naval Academy, you majored in engineering, and you got above a 3.0, and I'm like, "Check, check, check." And he's like, "Then you're going to NPS." I'm like, "Okay, I guess I'm going to NPS." So
interesting.
Yeah. And historically, NPS in the Marine Corps has gotten a bad rap as being bad for your career.
Right.
But so far from you know, Major Wish, who was just a student here, and some of the other Marines I've talked to, not necessarily the case. I mean, you do have to take a couple of proactive steps to, you know, make sure your career is not too adversely affected, but it's not a huge deal. But if that can get further ingrained into the conscious of talent management within the Marine Corps writ large, that would be a great thing for Marines and for the Marine Corps too, and sounds like for NPS as well, because now with this new program that's being stood up, like you said, you're still keeping the in-person 2-year program for everybody who is still coming. But also now there's flexibility with these certs that you can get via distance learning as well.
Right, absolutely. So we can talk a little bit about, like, there's a lot of these officers, like, historically, like, NPS is sometimes, like, you know, a career detriment just because frequently you get off track.
Yes.
And for aviation, like, this is among the biggest. Like, you just have no space in the career, like, track. Mm-hmm. But you still need a graduate degree, and you still need, you know, JPME for, you know, various, you know, command wickets and so on. And there's a lot of interest in aviation and, you know, getting a, you know, further education. So maybe a little bit on kind of what we've been developing with some of these things in mind. And the Ensign program kind of has some pieces of this, but we've had a number of discussions with, you know, in the Navy, the unrestricted line communities, like aviation, subs, surface warfare officers. This also applies, you know, to the Marines as well. I know those, if you're going to teach at the academy or something, it's maybe a little bit different, but, you know, kind of like the broader Marine Corps. it would apply heavily to them also. We're trying to develop some things where you don't have to get off track. There has to be a piece also from the Navy side. It can't be entirely solved with NPS.
Right.
But so, for example, what might this look like? We're working on a couple of concepts, and I'll let Anna talk about it a little bit more too. But some degrees that can be done almost entirely DL, something that could be a combination of, you know, three or four certificates in a variety of interdisciplinary areas. Mm-hmm. And right now we're looking primarily at things where we're leveraging some of what we're already doing. Like a good example would be kind of what the ensigns right now are doing as part of this program. You have one certificate in ops analysis. You have one in like an engineering, other STEM area. And then you might combine this with one that's kind of maybe like a little more strategy or foreign policy focused out of our national security affairs. Mm. And then possibly something out of, defense management or a second STEM cert. But these are combined to a degree. It'd be a little bit different type of degree, but this is what a lot of the interest is for some of the more warfighting-focused communities. They're not necessarily looking for officers who have, like a full, like hardcore, like STEM degree. There are a lot of the restricted line communities who are here in resident are. And kind of one other nuance on this is something where we could potentially award some credit towards some of these certificates for certain officers. And so this is something. So your roommate, Lieutenant Christy, we had had some discussions with, because we've been kind of targeting the warfare weapons tactics instructor community.
Okay.
In particular, you're probably a little bit familiar with this, but they're taking a lot of additional like very dedicated classes.
Oh yeah.
And they're very very focused. There's a fair amount of overlap with what they get in some of our certificates here, but it's a little bit different than for many of our students, because there's a lot of education already happening for them. Going through the WTI pipeline, and we're trying to look at ways that we can give credit for them. Anna, do you want to talk anything further on some of the...
I think an important part of this concept. So also most of our distance learning master's degree, it's, a two-year degree program where you take, say, two courses a quarter, and, you start and then you stop. The difference with this, with making them stackable certificates, is that you could choose, depending on what tour you're on, let's say you have more time, you can choose to do one certificate, and then you can take a break, and then whenever you're on another tour, you have another job where you have more time, you have the flexibility to kind of start and stop when you want, because they're certificates.
Right.
Let's say you have a lot of extra time, you could do two certificates at a time. It does make the range to completion quite large, just depending, but it can be tailored to the individual and what their career path looks like.
Hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And not only the flexibility in terms of the time in which you're taking these certificates, but also going back to what you're saying, Dr. Hoover, it's not purely just, okay, we're going to do a physics-based degree. It's like, well, you can do multiple certs in, like you're saying, something more strategy-related, which as a Marine, that sounds super interesting to me. If any of my quantum mechanics or EMAC professors hear this, I'm sorry, but it's not really relevant to the infantry, but... getting a baseline understanding of applied physics is great, but then also having something more, like you were saying, to round that out a little bit more for the warfare communities that are less really, really ingrained into the sciences, that would be really
right. So that's the kind of balance that we're trying to take. I mean, obviously, like as a physics professor, I would love if everyone kind of came through and take like, hardcore technical degree.
For sure.
Teaching like heavy weapons, down to the weeds. But the types of students that we're talking about here, it's a different type of student.
Yes.
And that's one thing you kind of want to emphasize. It's a different type of student than the traditional NPS student. And that resident baseline has been pretty consistent. I don't see that changing. We're not trying to change that. But I think the WTIs are kind of a good example. And that's something where they do want, like, so we've met with all of the WTI communities, aviation, SWOs, had some discussions with the Marines as well as like the information warfare. But I think there's a lot of appetite for education, but they're highly motivated, but they have so little bandwidth. Like they're trying to do a lot for the WTI community. And some of them, like we've been discussing with, are also WTI instructors. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're hard chargers and they're feeling like every minute with stuff, and they want to do graduate education. But what they need is something like a short certificate introducing them to the space layer. Like how do we do command and control in space? Like what are the basic terminology on there? They don't have time or bandwidth for like a super deep dive and a full like DL degree focused on space ops as others would do. And so that's I think a really critical niche. Especially right now, just kind of given, like when we talk to these communities, most of them, they're looking at like a short geopolitical time frame when like we need this knowledge like right now in like the 3 to 4 year time frame. Mm-hmm. I think on our side, it's incumbent on NPS to think about this a little bit differently. I mean, we have to think differently about then, like, if we get a, you know, a degree, and then, okay, maybe, you know, like 15 years later, like, there's more of a direct utilization potentially for some of these types of aspects. I think there's a niche for us to fill where there's a much shorter time frame, I think, for us to utilize these skills.
I would tend to agree with that. So just a couple other questions I had off the top of my head. So obviously we talked about Lieutenant Christie, who's SWO out in 7th Fleet doing the WTI thing. And obviously all the ensigns who are down in Pensacola. Any other active duty folks that are out?
Yeah, no, so it's interesting. So Lieutenant Christie was so I had met with him a number of – so as he was going through my class, it was kind of interesting because I'd chatted with him a number of times because he's trying to do, as I mentioned, like a number of things where like this is the type of student we would like to reach. A highly motivated surface warfare officer, wants to do education. But I mean, they're out there. I think he was at Desron in Japan.
Correct.
And he's trying to do some of these things on the boat. And it kind of depends on like, do I have like the satellite comms coverage? Am I in like the zone where I can upload my homework?
Right.
So several times it's kind of like, okay, sir, like I can send you this email, but I can't actually upload this homework to Sakai. So like, got it. His homework's always like very high quality. Like I trust you, like just, you know, get it to you get back in coverage.
Makes sense.
But so that's one of the things like, we've been trying to think about, that's something it's, NPS used to have some options. Like if you're on the boat, we used to have some correspondence courses actually for quite a period of time. I think, you know, during the Cold War and then after where you could take some things like you've got a stack of books and you did some courses, I think, you know, where maybe like, maybe your department head or someone else kind of monitored your exams there on the boat, and then you sent this all to NPS. And so we've been thinking, we haven't made a whole lot of progress. We've been thinking a lot about, okay, what does this look like in 2023 for NPS to do something like this? Because there's so much tech out there now that, like, we think some really cool stuff could be done. Like, you're there on the boat. You could take prerequisites. Say you haven't, like, applied physics. You haven't had like EMAG in a while. Like you took it at the academy, but if you don't use EMAG, it's out of the brain for almost everyone. Mm-hmm. And so something where you could get like a refresher for calculus, for physics, and other things, as well as some things like I even think like the class you went through, Carl, like on you know, just kind of like introductory weapon stuff. You could probably that could be packaged so it's just, you know, a series of things on the boat, and you know this could be sent later. So this is kind of something coming like way down the pipe. We're trying to think about what are some options for at sea education, and aviation has given us feedback as well. Like this is actually ironically sometimes maybe when they have the most time, like, you know, they have downtime there, like they're not flying or something like that. It may actually be better than if they're there on like a shore tour, in terms of, you know, trying to knock out a few classes, and have this integrated then into something where it could all build towards a distance learning degree. But yeah, there's a lot of interesting things that kind of came up with Lieutenant Christie, and he's also going through on an I-stop. He was going through a couple like shorter programs at SMITIC in San Diego. He's taken some, you know, very, very condensed classes, you know, like 10 hours a day studying for some of the, you know, the WTI classes there at SMITIC.
Okay.
And so we're real interested in this because I think the WTIs are like they're a piece of the unrestricted line community in the Navy that I think makes a lot of sense to hit. Like if we can work education out for the, you know, the patch wearing communities, and this would also include, you know, the Marine Corps to some extent, at least we've had initial, you know, discussions on trying to work in MOTS to this. Okay. I think if we can work out something for these communities, it will then apply to the broader unrestricted line. And the WTIs just have like an appetite for doing new, cool stuff, and they can move quickly. So that's kind of been our strategy, is heavily engagement with them. We've had a whole bunch of discussions with, you know, SMITIC in particular, where Lieutenant Christie is plugged into.
Just for our audience and for me as well. What is SMITIC?
So SMITIC is the
Service kind of like the and SWO. Mine Warfare Development Command.
Yeah, so we've been meeting with all the warfare development centers.
So there's Nautic, which is aviation. So everyone's familiar with Top Gun. That's the aviation WTIs are. And then SMITIC, which is the SWO WTIs. And we also went to NIWTIC, which is Information Warfare WTIs. So I'm sure you're familiar with MOTS. So that's the Marine Aviation WTIs.
I was not.
So this is out in Yuma. So many of them are set up kind of Top Gun-esque.
Okay.
And so there's kind of a couple groups in there that we've been looking at. Like Like you go through the program as a, you know, warfare weapons tactics instructor, like you go through Top Gun. Mm-hmm. And the intent is like you go back out to the carrier air wing then coming out of this and you kind of train the other pilots. Like you've gone through some of these advanced things, you'll usually develop some kind of new tactic or some new like nuance. Like you'll study a bunch of these things and a lot of the stuff. Like this is like the really the cutting edge stuff, like the very very tip of the spear. And like, okay, how would we develop, you know, a strike package for like this particular scenario, right? Like very cutting edge stuff. And a lot of them, like almost everyone we talked to is like, boy, I wish I knew like a little bit more about like, you know, space comms, or I wish I knew like a little bit more about the physics and some of this. Because we got some interesting input from NYWTC, from kind of like the information warfare, you know, tactics instructors. You know, they're supposed to go out back to the fleet, and they're like, okay, we can, you know, we can think about, here's some way we can do this, you know, complex electronics warfare maneuver. And they're expected to be convincing, right, like they're expected to be convincing like the CO, like this is going to work. You don't need, like in the extreme scenario, like you don't need anything coming out of the VLS tubes. You don't need to hear some kind of thing. We can do this complex EW thing. And like we won't be seen, and this will work. And there's a lot of risk though, right? If you're not like employing kinetic weapons, you're not doing a traditional thing. And so they have to have like enough to not only develop the tactic, but to kind of explain like here's why it would work. I understand enough about the like the weather, the ionosphere, and understand like enough about the physics that I can explain this to other people and make like really life or death tactics decisions. And so they're hungry for an education tie-in to a lot of this, and it helps then going back to be. It's not like they're being an educator, but they're teaching other people. They're teaching pilots. They're teaching other people and, like, explaining it to others. So it's, yeah, good.
I just want to caveat, because you made a comment in case any other WTIs listen to this, that we don't think you're trying to be, like, Top Gun. As much as I love my Top Gun bros, we know that not everyone's just trying to be like them. But to Joe's point, right, and these are people, the WTIs, they have not only a level of expertise where they understand – you know, what they're learning, but they also, as he said, they have to have a level of expertise to then teach it to other people and develop these tactics. So what we've seen is, you know, what they are doing within their WTI curricula is quite high level. And that's why we were trying to figure out, can we give them academic credit for the curricula that they are going to?
Yeah, and it's very similar, right? So, Carl, you'd be going back to the academy, right? Probably teaching kind of like the weapons course there, potentially.
I was, but, well, that's a discussion
So a lot of the Marines we have going through the kind of like this program in applied physics, you know, they're supposed to go back and kind of teach this, but have some higher level understanding. And so we want to plug in like just the right amount of that to some of the unrestricted line communities. And yes, all the warfare development centers, I think, are like a good place to start. And these are also like... like I said, these are, you know, kind of like also points where the unrestricted line community is focusing a lot of attention. You know, the promotion rates tend to be very high on this, right? This is kind of like, you know, the track for, you know, if you're on track for like major command, that type of thing.
Well, and I think put simply, like from at least from the Navy side, what we can see is like the WTIs are the dudes. So if we can get them to buy into NPS, we're hoping possibly, you know, then it can kind of spread across the URL community.
It's a little different on the Marines. The Marines tend to have like a broader appetite for education, right? Is our impression. Like,
yeah, that's what we've been told speaking to them. So
yeah, and like a lot of Marines are just, you know, the degree of maybe like self-motivation in the Marine Corps. Right?
You heard it here first. Marines are smart and self-motivated.
That's right.
Okay.
Right, exactly.
Fair enough. Well, I'll stop singing my own praises. Just a couple other things I wanted to discuss. So we talked about the NPS Extended Campus and other distance learning programs. NPS Hawaii. I saw you were on the muster page on the little news article. So what's going on?
There's the picture
with
the
Hawaii.
Golden scissors.
Yeah.
It was a great picture.
So is that? I mean, that's a physical location. So how does that?
Yeah.
Tie
so
in?
A little bit. So kind of a little overview on NPS Hawaii, and this was also a lot of this is driven directly by Admiral Paparo. So he's kind of done a lot to kind of, you know, force some integration of a lot of NPS education out there with the operational fleet in a way that I think, you know, is beneficial for everyone. He's driving things, you know, faster than the traditional system goes, but he also has, of course, like the visibility on like, that's what has to be done right now, right? It's like the very leading edge in like, you know, the Indo-PACOM region of what's actually happening and what we need. So yeah, NPS Hawaii, also around a similar time, kind of last fall, we had a discussion and Admiral Paparo kind of pushed to his, some of his shop, like I want something by next spring happening here at the Makalapa base. Let's roll out, you know, something that makes sense on an aggressive time frame. And so we alongside the INSIN program that we discussed, we also pushed pretty hard on this. We reoriented a lot of our resources and our personnel to, again, make a huge push for this to happen. So what does it look like right now for NPS Hawaii? So even before the ribbon cutting, we were going on this. We started pretty early in this calendar year. And so there's kind of three main things that we came up with. One is we've been interfacing there, again, with some of Paparo's staff on kind of pushing out specific distance learning opportunities. And it's some of the same ones that some of the instances are going into. We tried to leverage some of these classes. So some of the ops analysis, you know, distance learning courses and certificates. We also, space as well. So, a couple fleet messages went out. You know, Admiral Paparo kind of, expects that, sailors will better themselves by taking advantage of the following NPS opportunities. If you're active duty, you don't have to pay for this. You can sign up for this. And a lot of these, again, are distance learning. Some of them are, purely asynchronous. So we push out a number of certificates out to the fleet. There's a push there on the PAC fleet side. To get some enrollment. That was one. We also had some flag level courses. We had a course going out there for GOFO SES level on, it was like emerging tech. And so we had a number of kind of a mixture of faculty as well as senior industry people coming out. A lot of these flags, they come from technical backgrounds, but there is an interest on, stuff's moving very quickly and a lot of these terms get thrown around. But it doesn't necessarily mean that all the flags, even if they had went through a technical degree at some point, that they're familiar with what is machine learning, or we were talking a little bit before the podcast, reinforcement learning, that's actually kind of almost a different planet than say some of the other more classification oriented machine learning.
Yes.
These terms are being thrown around a lot, but again, trying to get flags this is a place you can ask some experts questions on this and get up to speed so you can make intelligent decisions, be right at the right level. So we had some some flag level courses go there on the island as well.
Short courses, to be clear.
Short courses for flags. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then the last thing, maybe Anna, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the short courses that we've been offering there?
Sure. And so then we also have been offering short courses for anyone really active duty, enlisted officers, civilians as well, primarily from our ops research team as well, again. So we've been doing four short courses. We did four short courses this year, range from 2 to 5 days. We have one next week, which is introduction to optimization using Excel, again, coming from our operations research department. And so we plan to do that again going into next year. Eventually, it will be held in the facility where we saw Joe with the ribbon cutting.
Okay.
But right now, they're being held in the training facility on Ford Island. And so, essentially, again, we send out a message. And so, whoever has the time and the interest signs up for this short course, we send faculty out there. They spend a very short amount of time on a focused topic. And for example, the first one we provided was, Introduction to Ops Analysis with Professor Jeff Klein. Very popular. I think they actually PAC Fleet had to control the roster because they knew so many people would be interested.
Oh, wow.
But what's great is the feedback we receive is what we are teaching them is being immediately applied in their jobs.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's a really cool kind of example of direct operational fleet. Here's what we're seeing on the classified side. And okay, here's what we think a short class, even something the optimization there in Excel, we're going to take this and we're going to use this. On some of the planning side and the near term. So it's an interesting, it's one of those things where this makes a lot of sense to NPS. This should be kind of filling some of this niche. It's not really training. Jeff Klein's not going in there and here's how you use this software. It really is more it's a light version of his class. It is more education, but it's kind of an interesting gray area and then being directly utilized by the fleet. So very exciting. I think this is this is how NPS should be being used and the kind of environment that we're in right now. But it's just very different than our traditional setup on there. And so we're trying to drive a lot of these things, but, we're trying to figure out, how do we work the rest of the system on there? No one's being detailed to do this. Just kind of how to, plug this into, the rest of kind of, the Navy bureaucracy and system is kind of, a challenge on there. But, really, really exciting. We plan to keep offering short courses there through the rest of the year. We're trying to work out now, how can we get more visibility, push this out to a broader audience on, social media, other types of platforms like this, just so there's like more awareness. Also out to the Marines, to Marfor Pack on the island. We have some contacts there, you know, push it out.
We're lucky because now we have been able to hire some personnel on the extended campus, so that will be focused on sort of that outreach and things like that, because so far it's pretty much been the two of us for these things.
Well, really interesting. We covered a lot of ground. And then sounds like not only is there already direct applicability to the fleet with these short courses too, not just the distance learning, but also you have a pretty clear understanding of, you know, problems going into the future of how this is going to integrate it and streamlining that. Really interesting and informative for me. Any last closing thoughts you have before we close?
No, appreciate your time. I have a lot of exciting things happening for NPS right now. I think this is a time where we've got a lot of advocacy. Admiral Parlow has been a huge proponent of NPS. You know, he's done a lot to kind of, you know, drive the system, and having, you know, a senior aviator, you know, 4-star in like the most important operational command driving has just been like a huge benefit for us. And so I think it's a very exciting time, you know, for us to kind of, you know, make some changes in a way that, you know, like really sets NPS up well, you know, to be relevant and, you know, to the operational fleets in a way that like just kind of an expanded way.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you both for being on.
Appreciate it, Carl. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us in the Trident Room. For more information about today's guests and topics, please visit the show notes. The Trident Room podcast has been brought to you by the Naval Postgraduate School Alumni Association and Foundation. For questions, comments, and suggestions, please email us at tritroompodcasthost@nps.edu and find us online at nps.edu/tritroompodcast.